quiz for you.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie. hello, everybody. My name's Vivek, and I'm an addict. Hello there, and thank you for asking me. And it's funny. I was actually this was one of my first meetings, just sort of coming up to about 3 years ago, and that's the only time I've not been back since. And I have gone to other meetings, but not this particular one. And it's funny because as I walked in, I can still remember where I was sitting, which was sort of third from the end of the second row here. And and I remember getting had a chat with somebody who was sitting next to me, and I just, you know, I was like full of kind of fear and kind of not quite sure what was going on and kind of what was being said and all that kind of stuff. I felt really overwhelmed by the whole thing. And I was speaking to this guy, and I started telling him about how I'd spent kind of 10 years basically trying to get clean and the sort of things I'd done, which in my case were a lot of geographicals, you know, moving country, going to different places, thinking that would make it all better, etc., etc. And then he turned around and he sort of said to me, he said, "Oh, yeah, that the geographical." He said, "The only problem with that is," I said, "What's that then?" He said, "You have to take yourself." And I kind of, at that moment, it really kind of struck me that he's actually right. That I'd spent 10 years kind of running to different places, and you know, the big problem was when I was running, I was taking myself. And it was such an obvious thing to say, and I sometimes, you know, it's bleeding obvious, really, isn't it? And sometimes I think to myself that, you know, so much of what I've heard and what I try and do in recovery is actually the obvious. You know, you want to be drug free, well, don't take drugs. You know, you want to live an honest life, well, do honest things. You know, you want to connect with higher power, well, start praying. You know, all that, it's just obvious stuff, but. When I was in addiction, and even when I first came into the rooms, the bleeding obvious did not kind of make itself apparent to me, because I was just in this haze. Over many, many years of using, I used for a very, very long time, and I pretty much worked my way through all of them. You know, I can't really say it was one specific substance, and it was the kind of the whole package, basically, over many years. And I was just, when I look back on it, I just became so kind of wrapped in this kind of drug-induced haze that I became disconnected from myself. I didn't understand what I was doing. I didn't understand why I was taking certain actions, how I was behaving, why I was feeling what I was feeling. It just became a mush, like a drug-induced mush. And really, that's what I'm trying to say is that that kind of coming into recovery and staying clean, it's been a process of kind of that haze sort of slowly sort of clearing, really, because it was such an integral part of my life, using, and really my journey was very much about kind of trying to juggle a normal kind of family life and the normal stuff we do and with my addiction. So, like, you know, I come from a very kind of connected, fairly big Indian family. I live at home with my mother, you know, my family. My sisters live around the corner. My mother-in-law lives around the other corner. You know, we're always in and out of each other's houses. And I worked. I had quite a successful career. I earned fairly good money. And kind of through all of that, I was maintaining my addiction, which is, you know, when I look back on it, I don't quite know how I did it, because it took a lot of effort, you know. And for me, it wasn't just about kind of the getting and the using of drugs. It was actually trying to find the time and place to use. Because, like I say, there were so many people in the house, and, you know. And I would use, you know, in the most kind of, you know, most kind of sexiest locations, like my mother-in-law's shed, you know, and my loft. And I would kind of spin these kind of really elaborate kind of excuses, like, yeah, I'll go around there and I'll do a DIY job for her. Or I was forever offering to do DIY jobs for her. And, yeah, this thing needs fixing in the house. And, yeah, nobody come into the bathroom for the next 3 hours. And, you know, and it got to the point where that was the reality, a big part of my using, you know, it was like that. And basically, as I came towards the end of my sort of time, I think, you know, very simply, I just I just ran. I ran out of energy. I just did not have the enthusiasm or the energy to kind of carry on living like that. And I just became so kind of disconnected from myself, everybody around me, my wife, my family, that I just really hit a major rock bottom where I literally, a few things happened, but I literally kind of got in from a mad day, and I just thought to myself, you know what, I can't go on. I just cannot go on. And I reached out to somebody in the fellowship who I'd known for a long time and who I'd used with, and who was a couple of years clean, and I just kind of found him, basically. My head was so fuzzy that this guy lives about 10 doors down from me, and I had his mobile phone number, but I couldn't even connect those two things, and then I'd put the word out on the street, when you find this guy, come and see me. I made it all dramatic, and it was only after I got clean, and I thought to myself, why didn't I just go and knock on his door? I said, can you take me to a meeting? But no, it turned into like a big, confusing event, which kind of sums up my mind, I suppose, at the time. And, you know, and so, like I say, I came in and I was full of all this stuff, you know, full of kind of remorse, full of shame. I felt really ashamed of myself, I partly because I felt, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, I should know better. And I felt, you know, and my family, in terms of like my wife and my mother in particular, they felt really kind of, you know, disappointed. You know, my mum used to sort of look at me and she just used to say, she just gave up on me. You know, she just said to me, I remember, you know, my mum's a very sort of spiritual kind of religious person. In the mornings, as I'd be using, I could hear her. She does her sort of mantras and praying, and she reads from the Sikh holy book every morning and stuff like that. And despite her best efforts over many years to sort of help me, and she sort of did all this, tried to do all this stuff for me, and then she reached a point where she said, you know what, I can't do anything for you anymore. She goes, only God can help you. Only God can help you. She goes, but what I'm going to do, she goes, I will carry on praying for you. So every morning I'd be sitting there using, and in the background I could hear my mum praying at the top of her voice, saying, help him, God, to remove this addiction from him and all that. And that just used to make me feel worse, you know. It really did. It made me feel, it used to devastate me. And the only thing I could do was just use more, basically, thinking I'd make myself feel better. But yeah, and so, you know, I just kind of, like I say, it was that despair. It was that despair, and I just felt really ashamed, and I felt I'd let myself down, and I'd stop. You know, like, when I say I worked through most of my addiction, for the last 2 years, 2-3 years, probably around that time, I even stopped doing that. I just stopped applying myself to life, you know. And my wife had got to the stage where her morning greeting to me before she'd be leaving for work was, why don't you go and do something useful today, you drug-addled loser? Yeah, this is what she used to say on her way out of the house, you know. And so I had all this kind of stuff around my addiction. And anyway, so when I came in, but I didn't, it sounded like a foreign language to me. I really couldn't understand anything. I remember sitting in this meeting and they were reading those cards and the other meetings I'd go to, and I didn't understand unmanageability, because my head would say, well, you've always managed somehow, so you're not unmanageable, you know. And then I remember like somebody giving me going to a meeting, and they gave me a basic text, and I took it home and I read it, and there was this thing about character defects, and I kind of thought to myself, well, what character defects have I got? And I couldn't think of a single one. And I thought to myself, that means I haven't got any, you know? I'm all right, you know? Well, I did have one. I thought to myself, I do shout from time to time. But that was the only one I could think of, you know? But what really kind of was the sort of the identification I got was around the using, you know? The fact that I was hearing people's stories saying that I use this, this is how my life was, this is how kind of things, how bad things got to me, and this is the fact is that I'm now clean. And I just held on to that, because I'll be honest with you, for the first, I'd say, good few months, it really did sound like a foreign language. I did hear somebody once say, they said, coming into early recovery, they said, it's a bit like being parachuted into Sweden. You need somebody with you who speaks Swedish, who can translate for you. And so I had that person who brought me into the rooms. But also, I've always thought to myself, like, for me, the most important thing has been to stick around so that I learn Swedish for myself, you know? And that's what I've really slowly started to do, and you know, slowly I've rebuilt my relationships at home. I've gone back into full time work, and you know, in terms of my life, it's really, you know, quite amazing how it's transformed. But what's really amazing is how my response to life has transformed. You know, I don't run anymore. I don't need to hide. I don't need to create that fog and haze of drugs to just detach from what's going on. And you know, the last 6 months have been so kind of challenging in terms of life stuff. You know, my sister-in-law, who was in active addiction, died, you know, very suddenly. She had a young 12-year-old son. My brother-in-law, who's in active addiction, ended up doing something really crazy, and he's currently in Wormwood Scrubs. You know, I've been kind of dealing with all this sort of family stuff, and then there was all kind of like stuff going on. You know, got a phone call last week from my family in India, and one of my uncles had died, and you know, and really, you know, all I'm trying to say is that I amaze myself when I look back on the last 6 months, how I've kind of just got through stuff. You know, I don't, when you know, especially around the death stuff, because that brings up a lot of stuff for me. I lost my dad when I was 11, and he died in front of my eyes, and it brings up a lot of stuff for me. But you know, thanks to being clean, doing all the stuff, you know, working this program, doing the steps, and just kind of, you know, putting in, you know, being open and learning all this stuff, I've faced up, you know, and got through these sort of very challenging times, and I'm really sort of, you know, very humbled and grateful for that. And yeah, and I do sometimes sort of sit here and wonder what life's going to throw up at me next. You know, I've kind of got it. I did a very sort of thorough step one, and I have got it into my head, because I actually prefer being clean and totally abstinent, and you know, I don't want to return to those foggy sort of days, basically, and I like being able to kind of process my feelings and identify what's going on for me and respond in a kind of, you know, manageable way. But I do wonder, you know, what's going to happen next, because so much has happened in the last 6 months. And I'll just end on this. I was reading a fantastic book the other day, and it was talking about how basically the world used to just be inhabited by gods. And so they got very bored being sort of gods. So they thought, well, what should we do? You know, how can we entertain ourselves? So one of them said, oh no. He said, why don't we invent humans, put them on the earth, and we'll invent this game called life. Yeah, and then that will provide us with our entertainment. And sometimes I do feel, you know, what is gonna, you know, what are they gonna throw at me next? You know, and but it just kind of, all I can do is you know, for me, it's just about carrying on doing this stuff and kind of opening myself up to it. You know, the more I get into it, the more kind of rewards I'm feeling from prayer and meditation and kind of just doing the work. And you know, it's benefited me, and it's like I say, it's allowed me to cope with life, which is new territory for me. You know, you know, cope with life in a positive and constructive way, where I'm not destroying myself and those around me. So if you are new, you know, to NA, you're at your first meeting or first few meetings, and all of this sounds like Swedish, yeah, just stick around long enough, find someone who speaks Swedish, and learn it yourself. Thank you.